Good evening. My name is Peter Simpson, the committee chair, and I call to order at 19:02 this Thursday, November 23rd, 2023 meeting of the MODL Planning Advisory Committee. I'd like to begin by acknowledging that we are in Mi'kmaq, the traditional territory of the Mi'kmaq people. Thank you. And I would like to review the procedure for the public to address the committee at this time. So an opportunity will be provided to all citizens to address the committee on each agenda item shown on this agenda or added to the agenda by the committee. Individuals who wish to address the committee are asked to note the following. On each matter on the committee's agenda, the chair will seek public comment upon the completion of staff's presentation. Each person shall state their name. All statements and questions shall be directed to the chairperson. Presentation shall be limited to 10 minutes. Persons wishing to address the committee a second time will be given an opportunity to do so once all others in attendance have had the opportunity to address the committee. Persons addressing the committee for a second time shall limit their presentations to 5 minutes. And anyone wishing to address the committee on a matter not included on the agenda can have the matter added to the next meeting's agenda by contacting Jeff Merrill, to my left, the Director of Planning, at 902-541-1340 or by email at planning@modl.ca. So at this time, I'd like to have a motion to approve the agenda. Councillor Bell, seconder. Councillor Vino. Okay, any comment on that? Call the question. All in favor?
Okay, so aye.
Thank you. And we want to approve the minutes. We've had two meetings, and the meeting on October 12th, we didn't approve the minutes of that, so I want to join them together. So ask for a motion to approve the minutes of Thursday, October the 12th, 2023, and Thursday, October the 26th, 2023. So do we have a motion for that?
Neither one of us can do that because we weren't on there.
Yeah, I wasn't
on there. I can.
Yeah. Okay, Mayor Carolyn Oliver-Getson and seconded by Councillor Bell. Do we have any comment on that or any discussion? Okay, I'll call the question. All in favor, signify by raising hands. Contrary-minded, if any. Thank you. Business arising from the minutes. I don't think there are any business arising from the minutes for this meeting. Okay, and then we're going to go to planning advisory committee matters. But just before I do that, it is my pleasure to welcome two new PAC members. That's Councillor Kathy Moore and Chastity Vino. And we're also saying goodbye to two PAC members. I'd like to thank Councillors Letha Haysom and Reed Wynot for their valuable contributions to this committee over the past couple of terms. Okay. So the planning matter today is the amendments to the Riverport and District Secondary Planning Strategy. And I'd like to ask Jeff, I guess I should explain the order of business for the sake of the two folks in the party. And thank you for coming tonight, by the way. So we're going to have the staff presentation, followed by committee discussion and questions to staff, and then input from interested parties, that's yourself in attendance, then back to the committee for final discussion and additional questions. And committee members will then vote on a recommendation to council. All right. So I'd like to hand it over to the Director of Planning and Development Services, Jeff Merrill.
All right, thank you, Mr. Chair. For those online, I just want to confirm that you can see my screen. Maybe not.
Just yes. A little piece of it.
Yeah, we only see part of it there.
We're just seeing a small corner of it.
How's that work?
I wonder if...
I can try.
Is it because some people have their camera on and some people don't?
Shouldn't be.
I'll join via Teams, and maybe that will... I'll share. Oh, you want to take that off? Switch that back to Teams.
Yeah, while he's looking for this, just want to point out that, that we have the mayor and committee members Ann Meck and Larry Hagel are joining us virtually via Teams. And we have one stated regrets for the meeting today, and that is Councillor Michelle Greek.
Okay. All right. I assume you can, those on Teams can now see my screen larger?
Yes. Right. Yes, looks great.
Perfect. All right. So we have amendments for the Riverport and District Secondary Planning Strategy and Land Use Bylaw. There's two amendments. One deals with wetlands and the other with miscellaneous minor accessory structures. And I'll go through both of those amendments here. For the committee. So the first one I'll talk about is wetlands. So as noted in the staff report, we had identified there's, or property owners have identified there's two properties in the area that have wetlands shown on the map, but it's not actually on the ground. And in the Riverport and District Planning area, the way it currently works is the bylaw is set up that it creates a no-build zone, so it puts boundaries on the wetlands. So those were derived from the provincial wetlands mapping. We put a boundary on those and said, we're going to protect these wetlands by making them a no-build zone. So that's currently how wetlands are handled in Riverport. The issue for these two particular properties is on the ground. It's been identified that there's no wetland on the ground. And we know that the mapping is not 100% accurate. It was done by air photo interpretation. We have a question.
When you say it's been identified by who? By who? By the owner? By local residents? Or by members of the planning committee?
Yeah. So it was the property owner for the two properties that are on the screen had identified that to staff, and as a result of that, staff spoke about it internally and brought these amendments forward for council's consideration. So on the ground, there was a survey plan, and when survey plans are done, typically what they would do is if there's a wet area or any other feature that's low-lying area, that they would identify those. So during the subdivision process, those weren't identified on the plan. The qualified person to do the soil assessment for the septic identified the soil for both lots being loose, sandy, dry silt over rock. Yeah, where's... I'll move it closer. Yeah, it was in the room one. The master one. Is that better? How's that? All right, now pull it closer. All right. If that's too loud, let me know, and we can adjust the volume.
It's too loud for me, though.
You can sit in the back. So the qualified person for the septic system found that the, you know, when they did the soil perk test, that it was sandy, dry, silt over rock. And then the property owner had requested that environment come out and do a assessment. And when environment official came out, they've walked the properties and found that there was no wetlands present on those. So they've submitted that documentation to the municipality. So this is one of the properties. It's had already been cleared for development. So I got a couple pictures just showing like what's on the ground. And this one, I put the contours, so it does slope down towards the water. And the second property is to the left of this property. So it's the forested area right next door. So those are the two properties that kind of raised this issue. Our map, so this is what the map looks like. So the pink is the rural three zone. So that's the zone that is the catch-all. There's only two zones currently in Riverport. The ES zones, all the brown zones, are the no-build zones. And for the most part, those were all identified by the provincial wetlands mapping. The two exceptions are at Kingsbird Pond. There's the Murphy Wetland owned by the Kingsbird Coastal Conservancy that upon their request, we had designated that environmentally sensitive along with Gaff Point is also ES. And we had also had identified a tree-covered wetland at Hurdles Pond and had that one delineated and included on this map as well. But all the other ones were identified by the provincial mapping. Like I said, so the environmentally sensitive zones are no build. And there is allowance in council's policy that permits property owner to submit a survey conducted by a qualified person to, you know, disprove that there's wetland, and they have to go through the amendment process. So that's what we're currently going through here. So the proposed amendment, there's a in some of our other plan areas, like Headville, we used to zone wetlands, but we had similar situations where properties were not actually, there was inaccuracies in the map because the map was done by air photo. So it's hard to apply, the accurate boundaries once you get onto the ground. So we had a couple situations in the village of Headville, and as a result, council changed the way they protect wetlands. So the wetlands are still protected, but instead of making them a zone, which is a hard boundary, move them to what's called a development constraints map, and the development officer needs to, before she can issue a development permit, needs to have a documentation from a qualified person that says there is no wetland where this development is being proposed. If she has that documentation, she can sign off on the development approval.
When you say qualified person, is that an engineer? Is that from somebody from Department of Environment?
Yeah.
Like,
so
who would sign off on saying that?
In the village of Headville, planning, it has to be a Department of Environment official or Department of Natural Resources, because those are the departments that are responsible for the mapping, that have created the mapping. So if you want to remove it, you need to get their permission to say that it's not actually a wetland.
Yeah, and if that happens, all the adjacent wetlands, if there are any, will be protected around that property still.
Yeah, it's only for the ones that are on the identified properties. Yeah, so it's in Headville, and I got it on this slide here. So there's still no development permit without that provincial approval, so we're still protecting wetlands in Headville. Oh, sorry. Thank you.
So I guess my question is in relation to, again, the identification process. And when we're talking about Kingsburg and this area, and when we're talking about our coastal protection setbacks and so on, we've referenced Ducks Unlimited to be that expert organization that we probably would partner with. How does this differ?
Yeah, so like Ducks Unlimited, they have like the wetland delineators, like those are the potential partnerships. And we've also been in conversations with the Kingsburg Coastal Conservancy. They're doing work, and I'm looking, they're some of them are in the audience tonight, so I'm looking at them. So they've been doing work around wetlands. And, you know, my understanding is in the future that, you know, they might also have somebody that can delineate wetlands in the future. So that would be another potential partnership for the protection of wetlands. Of course, the issue that we have is all the wetlands aren't delineated. In the ideal world, we'd already know where the wetlands are delineated. But the best information that we have today is this provincial map that shows these wetlands. It's not 100% accurate, so there needs to be a mechanism to allow for when those inaccuracies come to light that they can be addressed. And currently in the Riverport, it has to go through a rezoning application. In Headville, it's been changed to the significant on the significant water course maps. So they're still identified in the document as being protected, but instead of going through an amendment process, the development officer can sign off if we have a documentation from the qualified folks to remove that. So that's environment and or natural resources.
Okay.
So I want to touch briefly about, so staff's met with the provincial wetland specialist, and council and the public are probably aware by now that there was what's called a routine clarification memo sent out by the Minister of Environment, and that addressed wetlands of special significance. And for the most part, it's seen as maybe a relaxation of what environment's responsibilities are, or what we all thought the environment responsibilities were. So there's a lot of people a little skeptical about environment and their ability to protect wetlands. So we brought these amendments to the Riverport and District Area Advisory Committee, and we did have some members of the public attend, and we had a good discussion, and there were some questions. So there were questions about how is a wetland defined, what are the qualifications of a wetland delineator, and is the province updating their mapping? So staff have, since the Area Advisory Committee has done some follow-up, so in the staff report that's on the agenda, does talk about how wetlands are defined, and that's using the provincial definition that's in the Environment Act. And so they define what the wetland is. There's a written definition, but then they also have a map. And that's if the municipality that's what we can adopt as a mechanism to identify where the wetlands are with, you know, without actually, you know, as I mentioned, in the ideal world, we'd have boots on the ground and we'd go look everywhere, but that would take some time. So in the meantime, your best bet is to use that mapping that's available. The qualifications of a wetland delineator, so we've staff met with the provincial folk or official on that, and she mentioned that there is a course, I think it's the U.S. Army Corps course, and they do some training under a senior delineator. And the other question, part of that question, are surveys verified by another professional? And currently they're not. So we clarified that as well. And the third question was, is the province updating their mapping? It was identified that they do have a new model for identifying wet areas, but that model is not delineating the boundaries of the wetland. So currently, the mapping is a little bit outdated, and there's no current timeline on when they would update that wetlands map. Staff's recommendation that was to the Area Advisory Committee was to revise the wetlands policy, so it's 4.2.1 and 4.2.2, but to leave, so remove the wetlands out of the zoned areas, but leave Gaff Point and the Murphy wetland, repeal policy 4.2.3, add a policy 4.2 stating that all wetland salt marshes in Riverport shown on the Department of Natural Resources wetland and coastal habitat inventory, including the tree-covered wetland at Hurdles Pond, be included on a development constraints map. Also add a policy stating that properties can be removed from Schedule B where a study of a wetland or salt marsh by a qualified person shows that the land depicted on Schedule B is not wetland or salt marsh. The council approved the proposed amendment to the land use bylaw to remove the wetlands captured on Schedule A. Seem to have that on there twice. After discussion with the public at the Area Advisory Committee meeting and with the committee members, the district, Riverport and District Area Advisory Committee recommend to this committee, the Planning Advisory Committee, that no changes be made to the Riverport and District existing policies around developing near wetlands due to the following concerns. So the unclear definition of the term wetland, unclear qualifications for designated professionals, and having the outdated maps from the province. There is an alternative in the report. So if you didn't want to make changes to all wetlands and change the process on how those wetlands are dealt with, you could limit to just rezoning for the two properties in question that are currently have a environmentally sensitive zone on them, and you could recommend to rezone those to the Rural 3. And you know, we know that the mapping is not 100% accurate, so requests like this would continue and would have to come through and do amendments to that. Do you want me to do the second?
Yes.
Topic as well, yeah. And then we can come back.
Please.
So the other issue, a little bit more straightforward, deals with accessory uses. Currently, there's a policy that says accessory uses and that no development permit shall be required for any use, which is accessory to a permitted use, and there are some exceptions to that. It's being proposed that we change it from use to structure. And we've provided an example from Blockhouse where, so as opposed to an accessory use, that it would be no development permit shall be required for miscellaneous or minor accessory structures. So this could be, small garden sheds, pet houses, interpretive displays, and any accessory building less than the 215 square feet in floor area. So staff met with the development officer, and so I'll talk about her comments as well as the area advisory committee comments. So the development officer, just as we carry out revising the policy.
Jeff, can you go a little closer to the mic? I think she's really trying.
Sort of
everything. Yeah. So the development officer determined that revising the policy would provide more clarity and reflect the regulations of structures rather than the uses. At the Area Advisory Committee, staff explained the reasoning for the proposed changes and reviewed the Blockhouse example. And the Area Advisory Committee approved or made the same recommendation that staff's making, to switch from it from uses to structures. So that recommendation is that council repeal policy 4.13 accessory uses and replace it with the revised policy titled miscellaneous minor structures. And that's in alignment with similar policies in MODL's other land use bylaws. So the next step, so tonight we're at the Planning Advisory Committee. This committee makes recommendations to council. So your recommendation would go for council's consideration. If council wants to make any changes to the documents, they would be required to do what's called first reading. They do first reading that gets advertised in a local paper. They would schedule a public hearing, which is also advertised in that ad. And the public hearing is a chance for people to speak either for or against what council's conducted first reading on. And following the public hearing, if council deems it advisable, they can conduct a second reading. The amendments would have to be reviewed by the Minister of Nova Scotia. They change their name all the time. Municipal Affairs and Housing. The minister would have to review it to make sure it doesn't conflict with any statements of provincial interest. And upon hearing back from the minister that it's good, the amendments would come into effect. So with that, I'll take any additional questions.
We're going to go to committee members for their concerns and questions at this point. Councillor Bell. Councillor Vino.
I'll ask my first question regarding the accessory where you just presented on this one. There was a line in there that said, I don't know what slide it was, but what brought this about? Where did this come from? The public? Did it come from staff to make this change?
Yeah, this one's identified. So we have for each of our planning documents, we have what we call like a housekeeping file. So anytime that we come across like, hey, wait a minute, that we need to do this amendment. But we felt that it was a smaller amendment that we didn't really need to bring it forward until we had another amendment that we're going through the process anyway. So this is one, and really the difference between accessory use and switching it is right now, if you have a small shed, you need to get a development permit for these miscellaneous minor structures. So switching it would be consistent with the other planning areas that you don't need a development permit because it's a miscellaneous accessory structure. But just the way it's written, staff had identified this as an issue and are looking to have that corrected.
And just a follow-up to that, when you're using the word accessory, do you mean that in terms of addition? Like addition, not addition. You already have a home there, so it's the second structure.
Yeah, like something that's subordinate to a permitted use. So okay. If it's a residential use, and typically you would see like most of it's like a garden shed, would be an accessory. So the garden shed typically doesn't come without the residential. Yeah.
If there was the case where it was the first building was the storage building, would that still require a development permit because it's the first structure on the property?
Yes. Anytime okay. that it's a first structure, regardless of the size, it does need a permit. Development and structure. It also needs a building permit because okay. it's the first. But yeah.
Thank you.
And what is the size of an accessory structure that requires a permit? I know you've set a limit here, but is that?
Yeah, that's the 215 yeah. square
okay.
feet. So anything yeah, above that requires a building permit.
Right. Okay, that's good for clarification.
Yeah.
Okay, Mayor Bolivar Getson, you have a question or concern?
And yes, I would support the accessory building. This is not needing the accessory or the development permit, correct?
Yeah, by making the change, you would no longer require a development permit for these miscellaneous minor structures.
Yeah. Okay, that sounds good.
Well, Councillor Bell, you had a question?
I like the fact where it's being aligned with other planning zones with this second part. For the accessory buildings. So I think that seems to be in line. Now, with the recommendation here, the first recommendation, originally the Area Advisory Committee was not in agreement with what was proposed, but am I to understand that with consultation, they are approving what is shown in number one as a recommendation?
No. So we met with we haven't gone back to the Riverport Area Advisory Committee. So we met with them and based on their concerns. So we've brought the additional information here because they made their recommendation to this committee. But we have not gone back to the Area Advisory Committee with that additional information. But that would be an option of this committee, is you can always, if you could refer it back to the Area Advisory Committee.
Well, I'd like to be able to have the support of the Area Advisory Committee if the request that they're making is reasonable and reasonable against the policies of the other planning areas. I don't want to be seen as being an obstacle in the way. However, the second one, it seems like there is no objection there, and I'd like to move forward to at least get that one out of the way, and then we can maybe have more discussion with this one.
Okay, we could do that. This was the accessory one, you mean? Okay. So we... does anybody have an objection to making a motion then? Do you want to say if they have a problem with that? Okay. All right. So we're just going to pause this for a second and we're going to ask.
Carolyn has her hand up.
Sorry?
Carolyn has her hand up.
Where's Carolyn?
The mayor.
Oh, Carolyn. Okay. I thought I said Carolyn. I'm wondering who that Carolyn is. Okay, mayor. She's not on the screen here.
You might not be able to see it. That does happen sometimes.
Yeah. Okay.
Her camera's off, but her hand is still up.
Okay, Mayor Bolivar Getson, do you have a question?
She must be on a
Okay, well, I'd just like to pause it at this point and just ask members of the audience if they have any concerns or questions they'd like to raise.
Is this just about the accessories?
Yes.
Not on that.
No? No? Oh, okay, thank you. All right, so I guess we can wait for Carolyn, or we can just go ahead and ask for a motion to approve the recommendation on the accessory uses. So your motion? Okay, Councillor Vino, do we have a seconder? Okay, Councillor Moore? Any more discussion around the committee table? Call a question. All in favor, signify by raising your hands. Could country mind if any? There's none. Thank you very much. That motion is passed. Okay, now we're going to return to the first recommendation. Have some more discussion on that, Councillor Bellin. Any more questions or concerns?
No, I don't think. I just wanted to make sure that we've exhausted any input, and if Mr. Merrill can re-emphasize with the recommendation here why they're seeing this as a stronger, more practical way to have the rules so that they align with other districts, or because of the unclear guidelines by the province. I just want to make sure that I'm not pushing something through that the local area advisory is not in support of.
Okay, if I guess the PAC can make a recommendation to council. If PAC decides that not to make a recommendation with how MODL deals with wetlands, we can consider the alternative recommendation reference on page 9 of your report. I don't know if you'd like just to discuss that, Jeff. This is just a suggestion, given your concerns, Councillor Bell.
Okay. Yes.
Okay, Mayor Bolivar-Getson, do you have a question before Jeff starts in his explanation?
No, I don't. I just got to get my hand down somehow.
Okay.
All right. So one of the alternatives that was identified in the staff report, so if you didn't want to make changes to how all the wetlands are, you could just focus on the two properties in question. We do have, you know, the document from Environment saying that it's not wetland, so it meets the policy criteria for doing a rezoning from the environmentally sensitive zone to the Rural 3 zone. So you could limit it to that. And just following up on what Councillor Bell was talking about, another option could be that you refer the matter, whether it's in the entirety. So you could do the alternative, plus you could, for the process-wise, you could refer those back, or you could refer everything back to the Area Advisory Committee. So this committee has that option as well.
Yeah, Councillor Bell.
Okay. I'm getting a clearer understanding of it. It seems to me exempting those two properties, which our own planning department has identified as not being floodlands or marshland, would be the easiest way. But it could set a precedent for other properties coming forward and wanting the same. But if they do fall in the same particular category as these, then there would be no reason for us to reject them. So now the question in the back of my mind is, Is it easier to exempt these two properties without changing everything? Or do you see that that would create problems? And I'd like the other members on the council to give me their opinion, because I do find some of these planning matters is like dominoes. Once you change one thing, it opens a floodgate, or you knock other dominoes over that you have no intention of doing. And I'm trying to look for the best possible solution.
You know, if I could just interject too, you know, I think it's what Jeff referenced earlier, that what happens in Hebbville, you know, they you know, all wetlands are protected there, and so if a qualified professional maintains that a wetland does not exist on a specific parcel of land, such as what the two are talking about today, and MODL agrees with this assertion and issues the applicable permits, then all the adjacent wetlands around it that are identified as wetlands will be protected, obviously. So this kind of somewhat falls into that. Councillor Vino.
Two questions. My first one would be, how did this come about? Did a property owner want to build on this property and therefore it triggered the change and started this whole process?
Yeah, so they went through the subdivision process, and they were looking to sell the parcels. And, of course, with a wetland shown on the map directly through the middle of the property, felt that that was a potential impedance, even though the qualified folks with boots on the ground have identified that there is no wetland there. But because there is a wetland, like we have to go through an amendment process. So because it's zone boundaries, we have to go through a land use bylaw amendment. Our development officer can't just say, well, it doesn't exist on the ground and ignore it, even though there's no wetland. We're being told that there's no wetland. We experienced the same thing in the village of Hebbville. And as a result, we changed the process. So we still protect wetlands, but instead of going through a process where we have to redraw the boundaries by going through an amendment process, it can be dealt with at the staff level as long as the qualified person submits documentation saying that there is no wetland there.
Just a follow-up to that, I'm glad that you included what Riverport said, because when we went through the coastal development workshops and go in the communities, the biggest thing I took away from that is that community knows their community better than we do. They're the ones that are out there walking it, enjoying it, and so this makes me skeptical to vote against an advisory committee who knows that area better than I would. So I'll continue listening on to the discussion.
You've got Anne and Carolyn online.
All right, Anne Heck.
Hello, Mr. Chair. I have a question about when we looked at the pictures of those properties, it already looks like they were halfway being developed, right? There's already roads and clearing. And if that was marshland, would we actually be allowed to do that? And maybe I'm just misunderstanding the photos.
Yeah, I can answer that. If that was a wetland, and for them to put that road in, they would need a provincial approval to infill or alter a wetland. So they wouldn't be able to just do that without Environment's approval. But in this case, the documentation from Environment says that they've walked the properties and there's no wetland there. They suggest that there's never been a, probably highly likely that there's never been a wetland there, so that there's no environmental wetland approval process required. But if there was a wetland there, no, they would not be able to put that road in without getting provincial approval.
Mayor has her hand up. Mayor?
How many of these do we have, Jeff?
How many what?
That are misclassified.
Well, it's unknown. Like, it's these are ones that we have a map, and it's probably maybe a good maybe 80 to 90% right, but we don't know until they're identified.
So I guess I'm thinking further here. I'm thinking to coastal protection. I'm thinking to these things where I hope that we're better at mapping than what, because we're going to limit possibly development in some of these areas. So I want to make sure that what we're saying is correct. And I can truly see that this one is definitely not a wetland. But this puts the onus back on staff to make that decision?
Well, it's not municipal staff making the decision. If council approves it, so like what happens in Headville now is think of it more as a checkbox. So the development officer has to check these boxes before she can issue a development permit. One of those boxes is, there's a wetland shown on the map. Is it actually a wetland, or do I have a letter from a qualified person from Environment or Natural Resources saying that it's not wetland? If she gets that letter, she can check that box and then move to the next thing. If she gets all her boxes checked, she can sign that development permit.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Now, when I'm looking at this map, there is a house already, as we're looking at the map to the right of the subject, at least one of the properties there, and the property beside it that has that round, I guess, turnabout at the top. But down to the bottom on the lot beside that, it looks like there's a habitable building already there as well. So how did these two get there, and the other two are now in question? It looks to me like there's no wetlands on either side of those two homes either.
Yeah, so where's my mouse? So there's on this lot that's currently cleared, so we have issued a building permit, and there's actually a foundation being built on this lot, so there's a house being constructed. But what we made them do is we said you can't build in the area identified on the map, so we required them to get a location certificate, and so they identified the no-build zone on that property. So before our development officer could approve it, made them get a location certificate that they're outside of that area. So because she got that, she was able to say, well, you're not building the house in the wetland. So they were able to do that. The next lot, you might not be able to get a house on it without, as long as the wetland is shown on the map, it might be challenging for them.
Okay. I'd just like to ask Ann Meck if she got her question answered appropriately.
Yeah, yes, I did. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you, Ann. So now, do you want to deal with these two lots? Go ahead and...
Well, when we had discussions with the full council here, looking at coastal development and the scenario, I think while we haven't put anything in place yet, what most of the other councillors felt comfortable with was that if we had a property that was the setback was minimal and the elevation was minimal, if they came back with a engineer or a surveyor's, a professional individual recognized in the province of Nova Scotia, saying that building in under the exceptions was advisable without or minimal risk, that we would allow that to happen. So I see the Headville scenario following this same process. And so if these two properties were approved and we moved with the idea that if similar lots came forward and they were able to hire a professional in one of those fields to say that it was not a wetland and the province accepted that, that that would be the easiest and safest method to go. That would make basically the entire municipality more uniform in the way the decision was made. When we have a whole bunch of little piecemeal deals, that's when it becomes confusing for people who are trying to locate and build a property. So now I'm leaning towards the Hebbville example and giving approval to these two lots under the circumstances. I don't know if that can be accommodated in one or two motions, but that's how I feel. And certainly Councilor Vino and Mayor Bulwer-Getson and Councilor Moore also have a thought on this, as well as
members of the public. Yeah, that's right. Okay, well, you know what? At this juncture, I'd just like to pause it here on the committee and ask for any comments from the two ladies in attendance today, if you would like to do so.
Yeah, if you sit. Yeah.
Yeah. If you could just state your name and your community.
Okay. I'm Janet Peace from Rose Bay and from the Kingsburg Coastal Conservancy. I hate to slow things down, but I'm not clear on what has transpired since we had the advisory committee in Riverport. The councillors there suggested that no changes should be made to any policies at this point until we've clarified. I think the biggest problem here is how complex it is to identify a wetland. And what is the oversight mechanism for making those decisions? And as I remember the amendments that were put at that meeting and then put up on the web, it was suggested that we try and clarify that before any major changes be made to policy. I'm not clear from what I heard tonight what is actually coming forward for a vote. Are we still, Jeff, are we still looking at rezoning everything to be rural, or is that off the table now?
If I may, Mr. Chair. Yeah, so the recommendation here tonight is the recommendation from the Riverport and area.
Okay.
So the committee needs to deal with that.
Okay.
Motion.
Yeah. So we're not doing away with the environmentally sensitive zones at this point?
Not at this, so the Area Advisory Committee's recommendation is here. Mm-hmm. This committee can either accept mm-hmm. that recommendation.
Mm-hmm.
They could refer it back to the Area Advisory Committee.
Mm-hmm.
They could come up with their own recommendation.
Mm-hmm.
So in the staff report, there's a staff recommendation that is still recommending that council change the process from doing zone boundaries to having it identified as a development constraint.
So in other words, there would just be one zone in this area, and that would be rural. There would be no environmentally sensitive zone.
Right. It would remove the zoning and make it a development constraint. So wetlands would still be protected. It'd just be a different process. So the same mapping would be used. Mm-hmm. But the process, so when errors are identified in the map, instead of going through the amendment process, that you could go, property owners could go through and get the qualified person to submit the documentation to the development officer, and the development officer could check that box before signing off. Mm. And if it comes back and says, no, that's delineated as wetland, here's the boundaries, mm. then they wouldn't get their development permit.
And what happened to the concern about oversight, objective oversight, in terms of the decision on what whether it's a wetland or not? Is there any consideration for that still or not?
That can be a consideration. So staff followed up with the provincial wetland specialists out of Halifax and asked, you know, like, what are the qualifications of somebody to do the wetland delineation? So they've identified there's a U.S. Army Corps, I think is the... Mm-hmm. So they use that, and then they use, they're supervised until they're comfortable that they can adequately identify or mm-hmm. delineate the yeah. boundaries of a wetland.
And who pays for that process?
So those right now are provincial officials.
They're provincial officials.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And just another question. Where is Kingsburg Beach in all of this? Why is that not in the same category as Hurtles Beach and Murphy's Wetland? It's a protected beach, right?
Yeah.
And it's part of Riverport?
Yeah, so those beaches are in the plan area, but they're beaches, they're not wetlands, so they're not identified on the provincial wetlands mm-hmm. mapping. Yeah. So there'd be other mapping that would identify the beaches.
And if somebody wanted to put an accessory on Kingsburg Beach at this point, where would they go for a permit?
Yeah, so on Kingsburg Beach, it is a provincially protected beach, so they mm-hmm. have to go to the through the Beaches Act. Okay. So the minister, you know, my understanding is the minister responsible for the Beaches Act has to give permission to do so.
Okay.
Yeah, and if
Thanks.
They can get that, they can proceed.
Well, if they get that.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Right. I would just want to reiterate, you know, how complicated it is. We're doing a project now which has taken us into wetlands delineation, WESP assessments, and so on. And we're doing detailed measurement of carbon absorption by wetlands. And it appears to be just, okay, well, a territorial thing, but it's not, because we're dealing with a resource here that has really big implications for climate change and targets. And if we take that lightly and we don't put the proper measures into place for determining whether something is a wetland or what kind of wetland and so on, we are really going to regret it 10 years from now. So that's all I would say. I don't pretend to understand all the, you know, the processes that have gone on between the last meeting and this one. But as long as we are dealing with wetlands, a discussion like this has to take into account the value of those wetlands in terms of climate change and so on. And I don't hear any of that. I just hear rules and regulations.
If you state your name, please, and the community you're representing.
My name is Sarah Cernick, and I live in Lower Rose Bay, and I work with the Kingsburg Coastal Conservancy. I have a question. So would you request that an exploratory wetland delineation be done for every building permit request?
No. So if it falls within, so we'd still have the map. So the map that should currently drawn the zone boundaries, we'd lift that out, but the map wouldn't change other than the Murphy Wetland and the Gaff Point. So we put those over to what's called a development constraints map.
Mm-hmm.
So if somebody wanted to build on their property and it was identified as a wetland on that map, we would say you can't get your development permit, which means you can't get your building permit if you're going to build in that area, so stay out of it. They would have the ability to say, well, there is no wetland. So in this case, we have two properties where the property owner said, there's no wetland here, and went and had environment official come out and confirm that, that there's no wetlands on the property. So if somebody wanted to build and there was no wetland, so there was an error on the map, under the Headville process, they could submit that documentation to the development officer. The development officer would say, yes, they're the qualified provincial official. We can change that development constraint map, so therefore I can issue you your development permit and you can get your building permit.
I guess we're all in agreement that the wetland inventory map is highly inaccurate. So that means that if a wetland wasn't identified before, but there is a wetland, and because it wasn't identified before, then nobody comes out and does a delineation?
Yeah, there's that possibility that, so we know that tree-covered wetlands, so like swamps, are underrepresented in the mapping.
Absolutely.
Because they were drawn from air photos and tree cover blocks what you can see on the ground.
So I'm just noting that that's an issue right there. So that's something I think is worth looking at. And then I also, putting all the onus back on the province to do the delineations isn't really helping that much, because I don't know if you know, but there's not very many people to do these delineations, and it's just kind of passing, the ball back and forth. Is I don't know how far things are going to move in a positive direction, especially since I think we all know about the recent provincial wetland clarification, I think is what they called it, which was not really a clarification. It was backpedaling. And also, the province does allow infilling of wetlands all the time. People do it all the time. They just have to pay money. So they can get the permission. Anybody can get permission if they have enough money to just fill in a wetland. So that's not really an area to look for protection either. I'm just wondering if maybe it's a good idea to make sure there's a solid plan for delineating the wetlands when they need to be delineated, and to do all that work so that you're ensuring that things are being protected before you move ahead with removing environmentally sensitive zoning. That way everything's covered, and then you know that you're not knocking any dominoes over.
Okay, thank you. If you just turn your mic off.
Sure.
Thank you. Yes. Okay, come back to the committee then if you're okay with that. So I think Anne has her hand up. Anne Meck.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I have a question for Jeff again. And I guess it sounds like, is there just a mistrust of this new suggested process? Or is it because maybe things get approved that shouldn't have been at one point? Like, to me, it sounds like we're missing a little part of the story. Because if Riverport wasn't interested in changing the process, I know that they had some questions. But is there just a general feeling that people are just kind of doing what they feel like? Because I'd be surprised if that was the case, but I don't know. I'm just kind of getting that impression.
Yeah, I don't want to speak for the members of the public, especially the two that are taking their time to join us this evening. I think we probably all can agree that there's probably a mistrust of Department of Environment. And what do you call it, a mistrust, or maybe a nervousness about what environment's intentions are, especially since that routine clarification memo came out. It's kind of made a lot of people a little nervous. I would say that, right now, like, we're changing the process, but wetlands would still be protected, so we'd be using the same provincial mapping. So right now in Riverport, if a area is not shown as wetland, but it actually is wetland on the ground, our zoning doesn't protect that currently, right? So whether we change the process from zone boundaries to development constraints, that issue is still there. And I hear you, and, you know, one of the things, you know, maybe we need to address that, but that could be, you know, I don't know, like, you probably take more time to, like, rethink how we deal with wetlands that are out there, but that's a different process. So whether we stay how we are now or change, like, those wetlands that are there but aren't on the map, those aren't currently being addressed because they're not delineated. So they're the only protection. It'd be whatever limited protection environment offers.
All right, thank you. I'd like to bring it back to the committee now. And I just wanted to state here that on page 3 of your package, it said that a qualified professional has surveyed both the properties in question and has determined that there are no wetlands or salt marshes present. And, and it's known, as you mentioned, that the provincial wetland mapping has not been updated in several years. But this professional has been out there recently and has not found any wetlands or salt marshes present. I think you asked at one point, what does the Riverport and District Advisory Committee recommend? And it does make two recommendations. One, that it rejects the recommendations pertaining to development near wetlands, and it proposed the following recommendation to this committee: that the Riverport and District Area Advisory Committee respectfully recommend to the Planning Advisory Committee that no changes be made to Riverport and District's existing policies around developing near wetlands due to the following concerns, and some of these concerns were brought up today: unclear definition of the term wetland, unclear qualifications for designated professionals. I don't think they're talking about this one particular person who did this one at all. And outdated maps from the province. And so what they did agree with, and they approved the staff's recommendation, and we've just discussed this, to repeal and replace the accessory uses policy in the Riverport and District Land Use Bylaw, and respectfully recommends to the Planning Advisory Committee that Council repeal Policy 413, accessory uses of the Riverport and District Land Use Bylaw, and replace it with a revised policy titled Miscellaneous Minor Accessory Structures, in alignment with similar policies in MODL's other land use bylaws. So that's where Riverport and District stands on this one. And I know that Councillor Bell said, can we approve those two lots? And the planning director believes we can do that here tonight too, send a recommendation to council, that they approve these two lots. Yeah, Councillor Vino.
As I was raising my hand, I think you were answering. So we can approve the two lots, but still, based on what we heard, well, I wasn't there, but based on what the Riverport and District Advisory Committee is recommending, we could still sit at that for now and approve the recommendation, but still take those two lots out of it.
You could, yes, you could, you could take the feedback from the Area Advisory Committee, and you could say, okay, we're not going to change the process currently, and you could say more, you could refer it back to the Area Advisory Committee, or you could direct staff to, you know, to bring back additional information to this committee. But under your the current Riverport and District bylaw, there is a process that allows council to rezone properties to the adjacent zone if it's determined by a qualified person that it's the wetland is not on the property. So you can address just the two properties if you didn't want to address changing the entire process.
And just one quick follow-up to that. I am new to this committee, so I apologize if this is discussed in the past. Is there any plans to get a better take on these wetlands that we don't know about? Is that something that you know about in your department that, you know, I think that, especially with even the storm we had last night, stuff opens up and you realize things you might not have known before. So are we taking any initiative as a municipality to try to get better mapping, to try to get more information so that we can make the best decisions going forward if this comes back?
Yeah, so, you know, at the staff level, we are working with organizations. So we've talked about Ducks Unlimited, and we've partnered with them over the last few years where they've come out and you know, they've done some, not the delineation of the wetland, but done like an assessment of the wetland, so of its significance. We've also worked, you know, we've involved with the Kingsbury Coastal Conservancy, you know, the work that they're doing at the Showback, and Janet mentioned about the wetland work that they're doing. So we're at the staff level, we're still involved, and we do meet with Sarah and Janet to talk about wetlands. And they're, you know, one of the challenges that we have. So we did a natural asset inventory. I forget what their name was, the Municipal Natural Asset Association, I forget what they're called, but a couple of years ago, you know, they identified some of the natural assets in our area, and we have well over 4,000 wetlands. So it'd be nice to go out and delineate all the, like, find all the wetlands and delineate them. But at the municipal level, like, it's going to take some time and resources to be able to complete that exercise, yeah, to get better information. Because the best information is you need boots on the ground. You need the wetland delineators with boots on the ground. So, you know, things like continuing to partnership with folks like Ducks Unlimited, the KCC, and other organizations that are, you know, deal with wetlands, you know, we're definitely interested in continuing to do that.
Thank you for sharing. And I hope we also use those coastal protection maps, because I specifically learned a lot about my district that residents identified on these maps that I didn't know existed, and probably other councillors as well, because residents know the community.
What happens here actually does impact the municipality's initiatives involving the coastal protection as well. Question.
It's not a question, it's a point of information for the last person. I'll be brief. Just there is hope. The problem with these wetlands is that they require individual attention, and unless you get that, you have no idea what you've got. We're involved in a project now together with modal staff and so on, where we are teaching ourselves how to do delineation, WESP, AC studies, everything to do with wetlands, and we're getting the whole community involved. And I don't see any other way to do this. Government does not have boots on the ground, and you shouldn't have boots on the ground. You've got a country to run, right? But communities have boots on the ground. So if we can build this partnership patiently and try not to do too much harm in the process while we're doing it, I'm confident that we are going to, you know, really break the back of this. We are on the way, and we're doing really well, and the community is responding. We've now gone beyond to Phelps and South. We're involved with Rose Bay. We're involved with Riverport and so on. So we are working with Jeff, and I think we're going to make a lot of progress. My big fear is that we just make a big move now that's going to make everything much more difficult while there is progress going on.
Okay, so we have three things to deal with now, don't we? We have those two lots. We have the accessory building. And we have the initial recommendation.
So, Mr. Chair, you've already dealt with the accessory building one.
Carolyn?
Thank you. I guess that in dealing with the two lots, I think that we should try to move forward with the two lots that have been identified. They have been assessed. They've been assessed with no wetland there, is my understanding. And I think that we should be moving on those ones. If we need to defer this back or for more evaluation, or even till we look more at the coastal and how we deal with them at that point, I think that we don't have a clear way forward here yet, unless, Jeff, you can shed some more light on this.
Yeah, I don't know what else to add at this point, but that is a path that you can take. Let me see, Mr. Hagel has his hand up too.
Yes, Larry Hagel.
Yes, a question for Jeff through the chair, if that's all right.
Yes.
Jeff, if I'm reading this right, the existing policy as it stands today in Riverport, if the property is deemed a wetland, there's no building permit allowed to be issued. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So if we go the way that Hebbville is and we change the process for that, and if the person who owns that same piece of property then deems that they're going to build, would say the whole property is not a wetland, but just a portion of it, if they're going to build off of that wetland, and then they can get a building permit to build on that PID, but not in the wetland portion. So would that be a difference between the two systems as they work today, or am I wrong?
Yeah, so whether it's today or if it's the Hebbville way, if it's a wetland, if it's in the wetland that's shown on the map, you don't get your development permit. The difference is the process when there's errors in the map and to have the map change. So the expectation, we're still protecting wetlands. It just there is a different process to go through when errors are identified in the map. So instead of going through a six-month process to amend a land use bylaw, we're going through a process where all you need to, I shouldn't say all you need to do, you have to get the designated professional to agree that there's no wetland. So they come out, they do their assessment, and they say, the wetland's not here, it's over there, or it's not here at all. With that report, then the development officer, so instead of going through a six-month process, the development officer can say, the qualified person is saying that there's no wetland here. I can now approve that. So it's the same level of protection. It's the process when there's errors in the map and without having boots on the ground to delineate all the wetlands, there's going to be errors in the map. So there needs to be a process to deal with that. And currently, it's a six-month amendment process, where in Hebbville, it's not an amendment process. And it's one of those ones where staff brought this forward because it's the, you know, the frustration. Staff see the importance in protecting wetlands. We also see the need, you know, the perspective of people when, in the frustrations when it's like, oh, there's a regulation, and yeah, I'm willing to follow the regulations, but then when the regulation comes back and the people with boots on the ground are saying, the wetland's not there, but you're still telling me you can't approve my permit, I got to go through a 6-month process, like the confidence in other regulations and the confidence in the local government making the regulations is, you know, is eroded in those situations. So we're trying to do the same thing, but be able to be able to address errors in the mapping quicker, but not quicker to the detriment of a wetland.
And I agree with everything you said there 100%. But again, in the strategy that's there today for Riverport, it would be just a blanket no for that lot. Where the other process, if you get a qualified professional to come in and deem a portion of that property is not wet, then it just expedites the process. I understand that. So you can get a permit then to build.
Yeah, and just to clarify, if the what, you know, on the lot, it's only the area identified as the wetland. So if it doesn't, if the wetland doesn't cover the entire lot, you could build, but just stay out of the, don't, you're not getting your permit if it's in the wetland. And the same as Hebbville, you're not getting your permit if it's in the wetland.
Yeah, on these two lots in question here tonight, the qualified professional determined that there are no wetlands or salt marshes present at all, not even a portion on the lot is. Councillor Moore has a question.
Thank you. What I'm wondering about is what the motion will be just to approve these two lots tonight, because it seems to me that there's a lot of work to go on here about down the road. What's even going to happen with all our coastal development and stuff. So right now, I mean, a qualified engineer or environmental person has said there is no wetland. There's not going to be no infilling on these lots, correct? Correct.
Well, I don't know that.
They've said there's no
wetlands. There could be.
Pardon me?
There could be.
It could be, okay. But there's no wetland there that they're going to infill, so
no.
Okay.
Oh.
So how do we move forward on this tonight? Because these two people, these building lots, need approval.
Yeah, they're waiting for it. So we need a motion to recommend the council that these two lots, as specified here, be approved for the next step in the development
I'll move that motion.
You'll get the motion, Jeff. You'll schmooze it up and everything for us, will you? Okay. Yeah, he's just writing something up right now.
Yeah, so basically what you're, you know, to approve those two lots, you'd be looking to recommend to council that you rezone the two identified lots from the environmentally sensitive zone to the rural three zone in the Riverport and district planning area.
Okay, we're seconded by Councillor Bell. All in favor, signify by raising your hand. Okay, you know, I didn't put my hand up, by the way. I'm not voting. I just exhibited what you should be doing. Okay. Okay, the issue with the accessory lots has already been dealt with. There are accessory uses. We don't have to deal with that. And I guess the other thing is, what do we do with the rest, the bulk of the recommendation from staff, and also taking into account what what the River Portland District Area Advisory Committee has sent us, our concerns of the folks in attendance and also around this table. What is your wish with that?
What are our options?
Okay. Well, either approve it or it can go back. You can explain the options then clearer than I can, Jeff.
Yeah, so you have the ability to refer it back to the Area Advisory Committee. You know, if you think that is, you know, if you want to hear, now that there's, you know, staff's provided a definition of the term wetland, we talked with the qualified designated professionals. So if you want to get a, you know, comments back from the Area Advisory Committee on what they think, if they would be comfortable in recommending that change now, you could refer it back. Or you could you know, direct staff to look into the matter further. Like if there's a particular area of concern that you feel is not adequately addressed, we could look at that. Or you could accept the recommendation of the report and just kind of not do anything at this time and make that recommendation to council that at this time we don't recommend changing the process of how wetlands are covered.
If I could, I understand the reasoning for bringing this forward to simplify the process. But I guess if we can't come to an agreement or I see people struggling here tonight, they still can be dealt with as a one-off with having that process carried out and coming back through again, correct?
Correct.
Yeah, like we've done with these two lots, I think.
Yep.
But it was how long did the process take to do this?
Well, an amendment process is typically, you know, because there's advertising requirements, public hearings, it's a six-month process.
Which does seem a bit, I guess, if looking at these lots, if they're clearly not a wetland, it does seem to be a deterrent against, I guess, housing at this point at a time when we desperately need housing. I'm not sure. I don't want to blanket rubber stamp something that is a wetland, but we have to have some confidence in the process that our qualified individuals are making the right decisions when they do this. So I guess sending it back now, I don't think there will be any different recommendation that comes forward. So I'm not sure if we're at where we are with this. But I really do not like putting things in place right now that is going to do anything to jeopardize the ability to be able to build houses. But having said that, I'm not saying we build them in wetlands
yeah.
at all.
So I think one of Jeff's recommendations was that it goes back to staff to try to meet with the Riverport Advisory Committee again and trying to get some of these answers or some of the questions answered and come up with sort of a hybrid recommendation that comes back to this committee again. Larry first.
Personally, I agree with Jeff. I would like to see this go back to the Riverport Advisory Committee. Because it's my understanding we didn't go back the second time. So understand their concerns with the new recommendations that have come forward here tonight to adopt the Hebville process, because that does seem to be more streamlined, and give them the opportunity of maybe buying in that process. That way, when it comes back before the advisory committee, the next time we have everybody's support bringing it back to council and not leaving Riverport out on their own.
Councillor Bell.
Larry has said almost everything that I had in my mind. And the fact that the River Park Group will see how we rolled tonight on these two parts of that may lead to a compromise. But I think that staff should go back one more time, have a discussion, and then I would seek a compromise. The Hebville vision, as I said earlier, seems to be the best one. If they can't come back with a compromise, then I'm willing to make a more definite decision next time we meet as this group.
Okay.
So we need a motion to refer this back to, back the to area the advisory staff.
Yeah, for staff
to take back to the area advisory.
Yeah, committee. I think that should be written like that so that this goes back to staff and they'll make the connection with the Riverport Advisory Committee and work.
And I would move that.
Okay, the mayor's moved that. Do we have a seconder on that? Councillor Bell? Okay, any discussion? Any further discussion on that? Okay, all in favor signify by raising your hand. Okay, motion is passed. Well, no, we're not there yet. We got about 3 more hours of stuff to do. Can't leave either. That's a deal. That's part of the deal here.
Not at this time.
None? Any added items?
No.
Any in camera?
Not at this time.
The next meeting then is Thursday, January 25th, 2024. Do I have a motion to adjourn?